So what kind of trouble did you have this week? What did life bring you that you weren't necessarily happy that life brought you?
Hot weather working on the roof.
All right. Dancing on a hot roof in Savannah, Georgia. But at least you got paid for it.
Huh?
You paid for it?
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Long nights, worry, that you know we're not supposed to do. You know, this week, for us, it's been it's been an opportunity, but it's still trouble. Watching somebody who has, I mean, watching a parent dwindle in ability. I mean, 2 weeks ago, my dad could have a conversation with me, a little bit. 1 week ago, he couldn't finish a sentence and could eat, but his hand shook terribly. And this week, he can't swallow. And, you know, we're counting days now. Now, is it part of life? Yes, it is. It is. It is. Did anybody do anything to make this happen? No. Okay. Is it trouble? Yes, it is trouble. Because it's never just, it's always that and. I mean, that's the way life is, right? Because now you have to deal with family that's not always around. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it can be challenging and there can be problems that come with that. For some of you, it may again be you're looking at the checkbook and it's getting kind of slim. Or it could be, you know, that sweet little baby that rested on your chest is making choices that you know is not going to be good for them, but you can't do anything about it. That is trouble because it troubles us. So we need to have a way to, and I'm not saying that we don't already. And it's not just a matter of coping. It's more than coping. If as believers, all we're supposed to do is just learn how to cope with it, I don't see that. We have to find a way for this to fit in who we understand God to be and who we understand He's made us to be. That means we don't have to wrestle with it, but we have to find a way for it to work. Okay? I think God wants us to see how it works. Not necessarily understand why, but understand a little bit of how. So today we're going to press on with the first chapter of Job. My second question, I guess, before I go any farther. What are some of the lies that trouble you? What are some of the lies about that trouble that you and I just thought about that you have to fight through? Because there are lies about that trouble that come at us. Okay? So when your son or daughter makes choices that you don't agree with, what's the lie?
No fault.
I didn't do my job as a parent. I failed my child. That's one lie. All right? And there's others. What are some others, maybe? We've gone down this road, and this road only leads this way. That's right, okay? And it's not to where we would hope for them. That's death.
Bad influences.
Bad influences. There's all kinds of things that come at us when we encounter trouble. That if we're paying attention to the story that we're looking at as we look at Job, that trouble, number one, is an opportunity for not just more trouble, which it can be, but for, I guess what Dusty and former Larry Spear, who used to say, stinking thinking. But he used to love that phrase, stinking thinking. But it's true. Trouble is an opportunity for us to have to deal with that. So we're going to pick up where we left off as best I can. We talked last week just briefly about the difference between being blameless and sinless. We talked about whether it said that Job was successful because he was upright and feared God. And it did not say that. It just said that he was and that he did. It didn't say that God treated him differently because, or he was more successful because. Never says that. And then we talk about Job's greatness due to his earthly success or his faith or both. Okay, and we talked a little bit about that. Try to help us put all this into context. So today, we're going to move on. We also talked about some fallacies that came up as we looked at the beginning in chapter 1. One of them was that God picks winners. In other words, some people, God's just going to make them be successful and they're going to have everything that they ever wanted. And it's all going to work and they're going to be star children. Okay, you know, and they're going to get their, you know, their picture in the paper and they're going to, you know, God picks those. And some people just get it and some people don't. And, you know, star people are more important. Okay. That's not true. It's a fallacy. Second, God treats people who know Him differently and they are immune to the world's fallen nature. And that's not true either. We talked about that. Remember that? Because there are people who love Jesus more than I love Jesus that are in jail in North Korea right now. Because they love Jesus. It had nothing to do with the fact that they know God. And because they know God, God's going to let them or put them there. Or, you know, you get what I'm saying? Bad people don't always end up with bad things. Good people don't always end up with good things. That's just not the way that it works. People who know God are not immune to having to deal with the fallen nature of them. Three, there is no value in a relationship with God. Is that true? Absolutely not. Just because it doesn't get us anything doesn't mean there's no value in it. So what is the value of a relationship with God if it doesn't protect us from trouble? Isn't that kind of where we were whenever we kind of ended last week? We're beginning to talk about that. How would you answer that question? What is the value of a relationship with God if it does not protect us from trouble? The promise. Never being left or forsaken. The promise that we would be where He is. The promise that there will be no more suffering, there will be no more pain, there will be no more illness, promise. But when trouble hits, unless we've got a really good dose of that, we can get pretty well all tangled up in the trouble. And some of us who even have it worked out get tangled up in the trouble from time to time. You like me? There's some days you get tangled. So that's why it's so important for us to have a frame of reference that includes God's purpose and perspective and plan, but yet deals with the harsh realities of trouble that we have to deal with. Because there are a lot of people out there that have a lot of answers that can condemn and judge and hurt people. And that is kind of the legacy of this book we're going to talk about in the future as we get there. All right, so we're on verse 6 in chapter 1. So one day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. The Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" And Satan answered the Lord, "From roaming throughout the earth and going back and forth on it." And then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil." As we look at what's going on here, there's a couple things that I want us to look at, and then I'm going to have a couple questions. Number one, as we see what's going on here in chapter 1, and then we'll see it kind of repeated in chapter 2 at the beginning, because the same kind of thing happens again in chapter 2. Truth is, there is a heavenly dimension to the existence of trouble. You understand what I'm saying? If the angels are gathering, and Satan's up there, and he gets to enter in to that gathering. Where has he been? We'll get to there, you know, talk about that a little bit more in the future. But this is a heavenly dimension to the trouble that Job is about to encounter. There is a heavenly dimension to the trouble that we encounter. Do you think about that? Now, it doesn't mean that there's a demon under every rock. That's not what I'm saying. But there is a spiritual dimension to the trouble that we encounter. And this is just kind of an example to show us how that works. Second thing is, and I think that I find this encouraging, as you look there in verses 8 In verse 8, who's saying that? God, right? God is saying that about Job. God believes in Job. God knows Job's heart. Job walks with God. He lives the kind of life that no one can cast aspersions upon his character or his integrity. In other words, he lives a transparent life, and it doesn't mean he's perfect. Again, we talked last week. It means that whenever something that he shouldn't do or whatever, whenever it happens, he confesses it, gets over it, because there's nothing that anybody can accuse him of. It's already out. It's already dealt with. He is blameless. I think it's cool, and I think it's consistent, that we can have confidence that God believes in his kids. And that just like God did here, that God brags on us. You know, again, another one of those things that one of those Larryisms that I remember from days past, that God's got our picture on his refrigerator. It's a great image. That he loves us, he takes great pride in us, he knows us. And when we have lived those transparent lives, those lives that would help us to please him and honor him, then he has that kind of belief in us. And it doesn't matter the character of who heavenly or earthly might come knocking on the door, he believes in us. Not just loves us, which I like a lot, but he believes in us. He was bragging on Job. Not in a bad way. He's saying that. He's seeing this guy. You've been out there on the earth. We're going to get there in just a second. We're going to talk about that. But here we've got these two truths. There's a heavenly dimension to the existence of trouble, and God believes in us because he knows our hearts. So I've got a couple of questions. This is what Satan said back to God. Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? You have blessed the work of his hands so that his flocks and herds are spread throughout the land. But now stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. So Satan's saying, you think you know him, but I'm telling you, you don't know him as well as you think you do. And then the Lord said to Satan, okay, everything he has is in your power, but on the man himself, do not lay a finger. Here's the question. What is the relationship that's described between the Lord and Satan here? Now, does he trust him? I'm not sure that it's a matter of trust. I think it's a matter of, and we'll get into this word a little bit, it's a matter of authority. And I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about the Job 2 part of this whenever we get there. All right. So, this relationship between the Lord and Satan, where has he been told he has to go for right now? What's his domain? Where does he get to hang out? Okay, earth. He's been roaming to and fro. He doesn't get to stay where the other angels are. The other angelic beings. Spiritual being. He doesn't have that place anymore. But he can go there, as is indicated in the story. There's a distinct difference between his place and God's place, and even the angel's place in what's going on in this. Some people call it a heavenly court. I don't think it's a court. But I understand why they would say that. Who has the real authority here? And can we be comfortable with this? Who has the real authority?
God.
God. Okay. We know that because, now some people, and we're going to get to this, again, I kind of delayed some of this discussion for the second time, and we see this setting kind of being positioned, struggle with that because they say if God allowed it, God caused it. I'm just saying that is one of those things that are not true, the lies that whenever trouble comes, that's one of those that tries to hitchhike on whatever goes on. God allowed it, God caused it. It has, you know, they'll try to play that card. So let's go on. Then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord, and one day when Job's sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the oldest brother's house, a messenger came to Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys were grazing nearby, and the Sabaeans, that's some of those bad folks out there, the marauders and stuff, they attacked and made off with them, and they put the servants to the sword, and I am the only one who has escaped to tell you. So essentially, a lot of your wealth wrapped up in all that stuff is gone. And not only that, the people who served you are gone, taken from you. This brings us to an ugly fact that we all know. And while that guy was still speaking, yet another messenger came and said, your sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the elder brother's house when suddenly a mighty wind swept in from the desert and struck the four corners of the house, and it collapsed on them, and they are dead. I am the only one who has escaped to tell you. So all his stuff is gone. Now all his kids are gone. Now, can trouble be like that? Can be. So there is also an earthly dimension to the existence of trouble. We all know that pretty well, don't we? It's real. It's not imaginary. It's happening. You know, the people we love make decisions we don't agree with. Kids stretch boundaries. You know, it's what they do, but, you know, we don't like it. It's trouble. It's stress. Bad things happen to good people, too. Job was blameless. So, a couple questions. What categories of trouble do we have happening here? If we were to categorize trouble and we think about what Job's encountering, what are some ways we could describe the things that have happened to him? Okay. All right. The dimension is catastrophic, but what are some things in his life? Okay. Family. Okay. We got death in the family. Sudden, tragic death in the family on a massive scale. Okay. Loss, grief, overwhelm, being overwhelmed right then. What else? Okay? And it's not just, it's kind of funny how this is possessions and potential, because the potential earnings come from those possessions. Anything else you see there? Any other kind of trouble? All right? How bad do things have to get before you begin to ask why they happened to you? And what determines that? What is it that would be enough to make you ask, why me, God? Because there's some kind of trouble that Russell might encounter. And as he encounters it, it doesn't make him ask that question, but I encounter it, and it makes me ask that question. Because we're all wired differently. We've all had different experiences and come from different places and resolved things in our lives, and then some things we haven't resolved in our lives. So, how bad do things have to get before you ask that question? Why me? That's just grace. The fact that we were born where we were born, when we were born, because none of us had a choice. You know, we were plopped here without, you know, any kind of conference on our part. What we've got to make sure that we, at least I'm going to challenge you with this, as mature as we may be in being able to say, okay, this is a symptom of life. This is a part of life. Trouble is a part of life. And it is. Every one of us will have a point at which we do begin to at least feel that way. It's just some of us have a greater tolerance than others. Yeah. Yeah. You mean an easier life. What that comes from is seeing God at work and understanding how He works because you've watched Him work. Doesn't mean you didn't have trouble before. It means you saw Him work through the trouble, and you begin to build a dependence and confidence that God can work through the trouble. Maybe not the way we want Him to, because we're not writing the story, but He does. But there is a point where we all begin to, at some point, get to the why me. Yes? Now, the culture isn't going to agree with you there. That's a great point of departure. Because death is not something to be welcomed or accepted in a large part of secular culture. Because if you're dead, you're dead. You're done. They don't want you to go there because, or can't believe anybody would go there. And so, you know, we have to kind of think about that and deal with that perspective at times. It's not always easy. All right. So at this, Job got up and he tore his robe and he shaved his head, and then he fell to the ground in worship and said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised." In all this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. So truth number 5. As we look at our truths in one, Job 1. Worship anyway. God is God and He does not serve us. Boy, that one is one of those that there's a whole lot of folks that choke on that. Worship anyway. Not just when I feel like God is on my side and I'm blessed and everything's going great. It's funny, I was in the car with Luke yesterday, driving to go get his car and listen to country music. Country song that I don't even know who the artist is. But it was you may know the country song. Anyway, the guy is talking about all these good things that have happened since his wife left him or since anyway, you know, he wins the lottery. This happens, that happens anyway. You know, just the song. First time I'd ever heard the song. But it was kind of the inverse of that. You know, no matter what happens, we're supposed to be worshiping. And that's what Job was doing. Even though all this trouble was heaped on him through no agency of his own, he realized that God is God and that God does not serve him. So he was not asking God to be this cosmic vending machine where he put in faith and trust and then that obligated God to pop out life as a candy bar. So another fallacy we deal with here too is that God is an arbitrary, capricious God who allows trouble to befall His people for no reason whatsoever. That is not true, but it is what we struggle with because it is a lie that the culture throws in there. Okay? There's another way that may come to us too. All of us are imperfect. I'm an imperfect dad. I had an imperfect dad. Love my dad. He wasn't perfect. So the way I see and understand God Father sometimes has to be sifted through our view of who our dad really is. Some of us had a great dad. So we didn't have as many things to sift through. You understand where I'm going with this? So the lie is that God does things just to kind of play with us or toy with us or just because He wants to see what we'll do. God's not like that. That's a fallacy. There are obviously things that we are complicit in our own misery. But as we look at Job's story, that is not the case. These are just things that, this is more along the lines of a hurricane, a tornado, stage 5 cancer, if there were such a thing, and you've got 2 days to live. That's more along the lines of inconsistency with this story, stuff that there is no explanation for. And it's tough to come up with an answer for. That kind of trouble is what Job faced. And you got to be careful to be too simplistic on any side of the ditch you want to fall. You know, because it matters in the way you see God. As we look at this story about what's going on in this heavenly realm, okay, as we talk about the second audience in just probably next week. When I won't be here next week, probably. We'll see how that goes. The next time we get together and we talk about this is that to say that God allows it doesn't mean that God causes it. And for us, a natural disaster is a natural disaster. But if Jesus can calm the wind and the waves, then there's a whole lot more investment in anything that takes place, then we can't just write off and say, "Oh, God can't control the weather." Well, yeah, He can. So when those things happen, that's trouble, that's pain. You know, a house floods, a house burns. lava blows your house away. I mean, is that, that's trouble. And it's not just God doesn't have anything to do with it. It has to be God is in authority, and He does, He has authority, and He allowed it to happen. Why? And what this does try to help us see is that there's a heavenly dimension that is at work here. But that doesn't mean that God's not in authority. But that is a place that we choke. That makes sense? All right, so let's see if we can get through the end of this one, and we'll pick up at the next one. Again, I told you we might not get through one. So the question, why is it so hard to worship God anyway when trouble comes our way? I'm with you on that. I'm with you. But hear me, because I understand and I agree. Recognizing my need for God to intervene is not the same as worshiping Him. And the problem is, a lot of times when we get confronted with trouble, we're going to God for a fix. We're not going to God to say, I bless your name. You are worthy of worship. You are worthy of praise. We're going to God to say, save my backside. Yeah. Yes. And our pain is real. And God understands that. And He loves us, and we're His kids. He doesn't mind that we come to Him for solace and for help and all that. He does. But that's not. The Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And that's a different place. It's hard to worship when we are in trouble. But yes, we do get driven to Him. And I'm with you on that. And He'll take, yeah, I mean, He'll take it. You know, He just wants us with Him. And if that is the first step to getting us back to where we need to be, then He will do it. And I think sometimes we forget that may be why He allows it. So what's the difference in grief that is sin and grief that is not sin? Because it said that Job did all that, but yet he did not sin. You notice that? You go back. In all this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. He wasn't saying, God, you did this. You sent the tornado, God. You sent the lava, God. You gave my mom cancer, God. You did all, you know, whatever. He was grieving. He lost all his kids. He lost all his stuff. He was grieving. So we can grieve and not sin, and we can grieve and sin. So what's the difference between grief that is sin and grief that is not sin? John, unjust blame, believing the lie, whatever it is, usually about the character of God. Why is it that we start to think that God is flawed in some way, or that He's not in charge when we face trouble? I mean, you know what I'm talking about? It's like, God, okay, we start to question God's choices, or God, what God allows, what God, you know, the whole idea of permissive will and perfect will and all that kind of stuff. You know, that there's certain things God allows, there's certain things God will. It gets kind of confusing after a while. How about you? But we have to come to grips with this question of why good people have bad stuff happen? Why do they have trouble? And why do bad people sometimes not have trouble? Because there is a way to see it from God's perspective, but there is no formula. Romans 8:28. All things work together for good for those who are called according to His purpose. God uses all things to bless His name, even the stuff that we would never want to have in our life. All the trouble, the stuff we can't control. So at the end of chapter 1, we've got this first round of trouble and sorrow that Job has gone through. So we will, whenever I see you again, well, whenever that will be, whether it's the next week or the week after, we will start on Job 2 and see the second interview where all the angels gather and Satan comes back and he asks him some of the same questions again, and we kind of get chapter 2. And I've got a few more pointed questions about some of the things we've been talking about that I want to get to when we get there. Anybody got anything else that you just feel like you need to share this morning?
Right.
Father, trouble can get bigger in our eyes than you are because we have our lens backwards. Lord, help us to see things in our trouble, the trouble that we see going on all around us, the other people experience, that we experience. Lord, help us to come to grips with this in a way that we understand your character and why things are happening. Lord, how you're going to use this and your plan and your purpose so that, Lord, we will trust you in the middle of it. And we thank you for this example that we have in Job's life and how he had to travel through this, Lord, to show us what it means to follow you in times of trouble. I thank you for it. In Jesus' name, amen.